It may be our distance from death that makes us at once afraid of it, fascinated by it, and yet wanting to understand it. In contrast to the Western attitude toward death, the Japanese calmly prepare for their demise with a centuries-old tradition of writing in their last days or moments what are known as death poems. The Christian tradition in medieval times placed more emphasis on familiarity with death, and scholars wrote texts such as Ars Moriendo, The Craft of Dying. Throughout the world, many cultures display more familiarity with death than in the West. The Tibetan Book of the Dead, read aloud to the person who is dying, is an intimate portrayal of the process of death and the opportunity it presents for liberation. According to the Tibetan tradition, you must understand death intimately and prepare yourself for it in order to live a full and satisfying life. My intention with Last Breath has been to produce a sort of Ars Moriendo for those who engage in adventurous, eminently rewarding, often risky, and sometimes fatal activities such as climbing, whitewater paddling, extreme skiing or snowboarding, and remote travel. Although the themes of risk, death, and enlightenment addressed in these chapters should pertain to the many others who don't necessarily pursue these outdoor activities. Every one of us shares an inescapable fate. We are inhabitants of a body that will someday die. Moments of this book intimately follow that process as it occurs to the bodies of those who push the boundaries of outdoor activities. In each chapter, I've intertwined a story of a character in a desperate outdoor situation with the physiology, the medical science, of what is happening to his or her body as this occurs. I've also tried to address some of the spiritual aspects of dying, how other cultures regard death, as well as explore, obliquely, where the scientific and the spiritual intersect in the moment of death. During the course of research, it has never failed to amaze me how ingeniously the human body adapts to the constant changes in its external and internal environment, to changes in air pressure and oxygen, food consumption and water intake, increased physical workload, heat and cold, fear and other emotions, and blood loss. Yet that resiliency can be misleading. The human body, in many ways, is as delicate as a hothouse flower, capable of existing in only an extremely narrow band of conditions. We, as a species, are genetically adapted to a belt of tropical temperatures that prevail only around the equator. Without technological innovations such as insulated clothing, furnaces, and campfires, we would quickly perish if we strayed from that narrow belt a few thousand miles north or south. While we can still roam widely within this tropical belt on the horizontal plane, on the vertical plane, we can travel only a very short distance without destroying the proper functioning of our bodies. Humans cannot live on a permanent basis more than about 3.5 miles above sea level. Likewise, humans are extremely sensitive to environments that lack fresh water. Deprived of fresh water, they perish within a few days. The exact number, from as few as one day to as many as 10, depending on air temperature, exertion, and other factors. If you set the small belt that offers the precise conditions necessary for human life against all the rest of the planet, against all of this Earth's surface that is desert and ice, rock and ocean, you realize exactly how limited our life-sustaining environment actually is. More importantly, you realize how simple it is to step beyond it, how easily we can break through the thin web of life that supports the delicate human organism. And if you set that band of life against the enormity of the solar system, or of the Milky Way galaxy, or of the unknown reaches of the universe, we as a species occupy a niche far smaller than a tiny tuft of wildflowers sheltered by a small boulder atop an otherwise barren mountain peak that harbors in that single tuft the only life on an entire planet of barren mountain peaks. This is what, at some level, science and religion both are trying to tell us, how infinitesimally small the scale of human life is against the scale of the cosmos. But at the same time, they also tell us that human life forms a part of the vastness. That vastness is known by different names to different people. Some call it the